Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it to the end of another crazy week. Those of us in New York are dealing with some up and down temperatures. A few other people along the East Coast is still dealing with snow. Ooh, the crazy one. All right, a couple of new things to start with this evening before we get to our official shout-outs. I was on the train this evening, and I don't know about those of you who are out of New York, but in New York, you get the most outrageous of things with people trying to hustle something. You know, they're trying to make money any way they can. You see a lot of singers in the big terminals, and you see kids now dancing in the actual cars of the train as the train's moving. Well, today was no exception for me, and there was a couple of children. Well, to me, they're kids. And these guys said they were going to do some dancing. So I was ready to just stick my headphones in my ear and pretend I didn't hear them, like whatever. But when these little guys got started, they were amazing with their routine. And I am hoping that somehow, some way, they can at least feel a little good about the fact that somebody noticed. And I hope that if anybody's interested in dancers, you can reach me up here on the show through the On the Edge Show Facebook message box or on my personal message inbox or even on the website itself, because these two guys, they named Danny and Kari, were amazing, and they don't seem to be shy about trying to be entrepreneurs either in their way. So I commend them, because I'd rather they be on the train trying to dance and annoy us that way than to be menaces to society and bang us on the head to try to take our money or something that we've earned. So congratulations to you two boys for trying to do something that's honest and may not be easy, but at least you're doing that. So I want to start off with that. Now, also, tonight we have a new sponsor for the night, and this is a young man that I had the pleasure of meeting back in about November or December of last year. And this young man he's flamboyant, he's outspoken, he's funny, he's a party dude, he's a smart guy. His name is Derek Bell. And if those of you that are on my Facebook network, you have probably seen me tag him as Derek Mr. Conceited Bell. And he's nothing like that tag, everyone. He's just confident who he is, and he's a very good guy. However, he has a little project that he's doing, a reality show. He's out there making entrepreneurial moves, and I'm honored to know him. And I'm honored that he finds this show worthy of support as well. And a little bit later, he's going to be on to just explain just a little bit in the beginning of the segment before tonight's discussion starts what he's doing. And I'm asking all of you that have listened in and are very much involved with our Saturday showcase to listen to what he has to say. And if everything that he is speaking about interests you, try to find a way to reach out to him and let him tell you more and get your support for him as well, because he's another one trying to remain positive, keep educated, be an entrepreneur, and I'm all for supporting that type of positivity in our community. So, Derek, if you are out there, I want to thank you very much for your sponsorship for tonight. I want to let you know, baby boy, that I'm proud of everything that I've seen you do from start to finish, so I appreciate all that you do. So, ladies and gentlemen, our shout-outs is today Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City, currently with iFloRadio.com. You can hear Barry spin his magic on iFloRadio on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing New York City with the best of live R&B events in Brooklyn and in Manhattan as the CEO of that great company, Track One Entertainment. Now, all of you have been hearing me speaking about this event that is coming up in now less than 2 weeks. It is called the So You Think You Can Sing competition. This is for all of you aspiring singers out there that are trying to get your feet wet into the industry. You want to be heard and seen, at least get a shot at somebody hearing you. Well, if you have not done so yet, head over to track1entertainment.web.com. Click on the So You Think You Can Sing flyer. More than likely, you're going to see a picture of Whitney Houston on that flyer with the advertisement on it. That's the flyer you want. Click on it. There's still time to register in advance for $25. And if that's not what you can do, there's always a way to do it on the day of the event. It's going to be at 497 DeKalb Avenue in Brooklyn at a place called the Brooklyn Knights. You can register at the door, but there's going to be a $5 late fee or last-minute fee, so it's going to be $30 at the door. You can bring anybody that you like to support you for $5 audience fee and let them support you and cheer you on. Now, if you don't know already, February 11th marks the anniversary of the late legendary Whitney Houston, and because that competition takes place on that night, they have decided to do an honorary tribute show in her honor. And if you should happen to choose a song from their 1,200 song playlist for auditioning that happens to be a tune of Whitney Houston, the judges automatically give you bonus points before you even open your mouth to sing. And it's not mandatory, but if you want that edge up, which I doubt anybody's going to say no, that's the way that you can get a little edge up on your final scores. This is one entertainment that has been going on. This is the fifth year now. It's been helping a lot of people, you know, get their connection. So get out there and try it. And for nothing else, at least you got a good time and people got to hear you. And you never know who's in the audience, even if you're not the winner. So let's just see how that goes. Now, moving right along, my team, Lady Diamond Elaine Yevez. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who have been asking me about her, she's not well at the moment. Hopefully everything will go okay with her. She will return as soon as she's overcome all that's going on with her. And our writer showcase is still continuing. So those of you that have poetry, short stories, you know, limericks, or even song lyrics that you're going to put into the spoken word, please contact me on the show, on the Edge page, any of those places, and submit your piece so we can review it. If you are in school or you are a teacher who is in school and know some children that are very much into writing and they're very diligent in what they do, if you submit a specific piece to us as a teacher, we will automatically feature that artist for the week, that writer for the week. So that's what we'll do. For the rest of you, if you want to send in your work, send it in to us so that we can review it and we will pick the winners if you're not a teacher accolading a student, okay? So that's what we want to get with. Now, I am going to be speaking tonight on the subject, Who Am I? Do interracial adoptions cause children to lose their cultural and religious racial identity? Now, today we are not bashing anyone who is adopting children of a different race, because loving a child is not the question here. We are not asking if people of a different race are capable of loving or giving that child a good home. That's not what we're speaking on. We're speaking again, once again, about the semantics of the situation itself. Is there advantages? Are there disadvantages? Should culture be something that is a major factor, both from the law qualifying parents that want to adopt, as well as the child being in these homes? This is what we're speaking on. This should not be an issue where people are going to be fighting about anything, because no one is bashing anyone today. We are strictly asking questions and want to hear all of your intelligent viewpoints in whichever way that you go with it. So let's do that. So, you know how this goes. Our early break, out of word from our sponsors, and we will be back to start this discussion. However, those of you who know me know that I am a diehard New York Knicks fan, and I'm happy to say that they blew the Cavaliers the hell out yesterday evening, and I'm happy. So I am going to give my boys their shout-out with the New York Knicks theme going into our, after that, we'll have our early break song, our word from our sponsors, and we will be back. Hopefully, Derek will be up first, and we will get this discussion started. So until then, everyone, hang out with me. Keep it locked right here with Katie. Be right back. We'll be right back.
you just don't know you can't do. I'm the same way too. Me in the backseat, cause I know for sure that it's not me to let you drive. It just don't feel right. Oh yeah.
On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help run their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. Yes, Nix, you go. Okay, that was Joe with Compromise. Love that song, guys. All right, we have some panelists on the line. We're going to get started, and we will get this discussion underway in just a minute. Let me bring in our first one. Welcome to the show, Coley, on the air.
Hey, Katie, it's Derek.
Hey, baby, what's up? Hi. All right. Okay, okay. To everyone, this is Derek Bell. This is who I was speaking about earlier in the commentary and the intro. All right, Derek, I'm giving you the first little bit of the show today for you to just tell us a little bit about what you're doing. You know that I'm very proud of you from the day that we met on your birthday party and right up. So everything that you've been doing has been proof of what people who want to make a change in the community can. So tell them a little bit about what you're doing and how you're doing it and take a little bit of time to do that.
Okay, right now my main focus as a fashion student at the Art Institute is to get my clothing line, you know, launched. So what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to organize now is a fashion show, a fundraising fashion show. I want to donate money to the Boys and Girls Club and in Fort Greene. So I'm trying to throw a fashion show for that in that area, and I'm, you know, seeking sponsors and donations and, you know, volunteers for that project. I'm also doing a reality show, The Grind New York City, so I'm trying to get, you know, everything underway at the same time.
Wow. I'm really, really proud of you. And the Boys and Girls Club, see, that's a new spin for me because we never really got to touch on all the details of what you're doing. So what prompted you to want to do the Boys and Girls Club? Is there a specific reason?
I decided to do the Boys and Girls Club because I went there as a child, and I still have siblings, you know, growing up that still go there. And when I go and pick them up, I see, you know, things that could be fixed around there. I see the building wear and tear. I see, you know, the inside could use more supplies and things. So I just want to go over there and just, you know, for the first time, give back to the place where I started. I feel like
that's
it's very important before I move forward to not take a step back, but visit the past a little bit and, you know, change it for somebody else.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that I've been preaching, for lack of a better word, on the show is pretty much you take the small that you can control and you make a difference, even if it's one small difference at a time. The Boys and Girls Club, as we spoke about in the previous segment, and I think you told me you listened in on that, where the black community in particular has lost a lot of their big community beacons, and that's one that for some reason has stayed around, regardless of wear and tear on the building or whatever, there's still a way that children have at least one after-school program to go to. So, and I do see when those children come out of the Boys and Girls Club, they definitely have some culture to them. You know, and I'm not speaking racial culture. I'm speaking behavior modification. I'm speaking things to that effect. It's like when they come out, they have some sort of etiquette, if you want to call it that. So there's something that they look forward to going there. So I appreciate everything that you are doing. Tell my listeners where they can contact you for more information, how they can be sponsors, donations, whatever the case is. You can do that.
Okay. You guys can check me out at facebook.com/IamDereque, D-E-R-I-Q-U-E. You can also search my Instagram of the same name, my website, IamDereque.com, and IamDereque@gmail.com.
Wow.
Yeah, everything is just straight, you know, my name. I just wanted to keep it very simple. I didn't want to get extravagant. I just want to do basic things that can make a change without, you know, making too much noise about it. I don't want to cause an uproar. I just want to, you know, quietly change some things.
Usually that's the way that real change happens. It's not the people holding the banners and blowing their own horn. It's the ones that's just creeping up behind you and doing certain things. So, you know what? God bless you on that. And I hope that everything is as successful as you would like it to be. Okay? So what I would like for you to do, if you want to hang on and listen out for the rest of the discussion, I appreciate it. But if you cannot do that, go to my inbox and give me all the details about your reality show, your sponsorship, everything, so that I can link up on all the On the Edge show, you know, promotions and everything. And I do thank you for your sponsorship tonight. Really, really,
no problem. No problem. I love the show. Like you said, since my birthday, I've just been listening nonstop. So I really appreciate it, and I'm gonna continue to listen to the show.
All right, baby. Thank you very much. Bringing in our next panelist for the evening. Welcome to the show, Coley. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Katie? This is Stalo.
Hi, Stalo. I just need you to speak up a little bit. There's someone behind you, but you're going to have the floor first. Hold on. Welcome to the show, Coley. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
All right, and God bless everyone that's here on the panel this evening.
God bless.
All right. We are going to be speaking tonight on the pros and cons of interracial adoption. Does adoption from one culture to another take away their identity? Does it cause loss in their connection with their culture, with their identity, with their understanding of their race, of whatever it is that goes along with whatever culture they are? Okay, everybody I know is pretty much thinking that interracism simply means black to white. But remember, there's a lot of people that are being picked out of Russia. There's a lot of people going across to other places, third world countries, and they're getting children, you know, brought back here. And my thing is, my belief is this. I don't think that race matters when it comes down to loving a child. I don't think that. I do believe that everybody who's truly into adopting children to give them a better life can do that. And color and race doesn't matter. However, race matters and culture matters when you are dealing with, especially if you're not familiar with the customary ways of it. So my thing is, if you're going to go out there and adopt a child that's not of your upbringing, you really need to make it your priority and your obligation to get out there and learn everything there is to know about that child's culture, because racism is a factor in this land. Prejudice is a factor in this land. Hate bashing is a factor in this land. Children are not being brought up in the village anymore, so their words are a lot more cool. And if you're trying to teach your interracial child or your other race child about everybody is loving and everybody deserves to be treated equally, and you're not teaching them about the bad sides of things or what it is that they need to be familiar with so that they can make an informed decision in their life, you're taking away or shortcutting what that child can have. So that's my opinion. What's yours, Stilo?
Well, absolutely. I agree with you 100%, and I will go as far as...
You're sounding a little bit muffled.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
that sounds better.
I will go as far as to say that not only has even the recent events, everything that's been going on with Trayvon Martin, everything that's been going on with the... Finally, there's been some exposure to the things that's been going on every day, day in and day out. And finally, we are in the age of time where we can see where people are killing our children in the streets, and we have another medium to go to hear about news. We don't have to depend on the agenda-driven things on the television screen. So now that we know these things, it's already been confirmed that even within our own families, we need to instill this cultural background in our children, if for nothing else but to save their lives. And now when you talk of another ethnicity, then adopting a child of another ethnicity, And then you talk of a whole other obstacle that, okay, we can't say there's no, now finally we're at a point where people can't keep saying the race question is no longer a question. They can't say we're in a post-racial society when Trayvon Martin did in the streets and you saw it this time, you know, and yeah. Zimmerman walked away. Like we've known this has been going on, but most of us only been known this because of study. And the majority of people aren't encouraged to study. So, therefore, most people didn't even know. You know, that's really the truth.
To touch on that point that you just made before you continue, through study is what we knew or based on what, as at least as African-Americans, what our ancestors taught us, but there's a lot more of, like, open practice racism happening on not just, well, mainly blacks. We do know that. That's without saying, and it's not a conspiracy thing. It is what it is. Every other thing that you're hearing with a black unarmed man shot is somebody went into somebody's home, you know, for one thing and winds up getting killed for another, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
We're aware of that. And if you are going to be a parent or a set of parents that are taking on a child with this type of content that goes with what this person is, this child is, and you want to close your eyes and show him the flowery visions of the world, you know, you're really shortcutting his full set of tools. And my belief in everything is, you should have full disclosure to everything that's involved as much as you can be given. Because in life, you need to know all your options so that you can make an informed decision. That's my belief. So if you want to walk in and say, no, honey, it doesn't matter that you're black, you're beautiful, you're a sweetheart, is it? Meanwhile, this child is growing up when he can read or she can read and read that this person got called the N-word or this person got told that they were black.
And not just read. Not just read, but she's going to be exposed to it, and the racism is going to be real, whether the parent, you know, rationalizes it or perceives it or not. That's still going to happen to that child. That child is going to go through, you know. So just because you wear a veil, must you put that same veil on a child that you didn't even birth? Now that's not. I don't mean to be aggressive, but I just mean that what I say.
That's not aggressive at all. It's a factual and very truthful and very necessary statement to make.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go over to Deacon for a minute. Deacon?
There's a lot of things going on with that type of situation where a white person taking on a young child, a black child at that. You can't take a white crayon and color me black. First of all, there's no possible way you're going to do that. So if you're white, you don't know nothing about my culture or where I come from. I could be an inner city child of you, and you taking me into your home. There's nothing that you can teach me about what I already know, where I come from.
You
know, and there's no way that you're going to show me love. And then as I get older, I go out into the world and I run into the same people that has the same color skin as you have. And I'm not treated the same as the way you treat me, even if you show me love. But then I have to go up against the people with the same skin tone as you, but they treat me like I'm dirt. You know, that's going to be not only confusing, it's going to make that child resent and hold in a lot of hate. And we're trying today to rid a lot of hate. And it's just not right to me.
Absolutely. Well, I was reading a lot of articles today on the subject, and, you know, no matter how many people that wrote their articles disagreed on one point or another, all of them had one common ground. And I can say that you don't need to be an accredited writer to know that this exists. But just think, let's take race and all sorts of differences off of the table. Let's just speak about plain adoption. Okay, let's just talk about the pros and cons of that.
Right.
If this child was just adopted, it could be with the same race and the whole nine, was adopted, all right? In the beginning, let's say it was a baby that was adopted and grew up and noticed the differences, okay? Well, now this person is going to want to know what the situation is. If they were told that they were adopted, the adoptive parent runs the risk of that person wanting to find their family, know about themselves, not so much because they want to go against the person that raised them, but because they want to know who they are. Now, if that's the case with a standard, regular, traditional type adoption, what is going to happen when all that other stuff we just spoke about comes into play in addition to what's already going to happen? So, if you are a parent that, because racism is a horrible thing to you, because people getting killed disturbs you, or because you just don't know, but you just love this child, or you just want this child, okay, you have an obligation. You have an obligation to make sure that everything that's as natural to that child's culture as it is on the table. Take them to the neighborhoods where black churches and black things take place. Or if it's a Chinese person, you know, go in and figure out what the languages are, what were they raised with. And, of course, age is a factor. Age is a factor. If you're taking in a preteen, they're kind of comprehensive on people's language and what they say. Okay, so now you're going to be dealing with that, because now this child is going to be dealing with emotions that in his or her immaturity stage, okay?
They're not able to cope with.
You know that? Say that again, Salo?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just you know, what you said was right on point, then they're going to deal with emotions and things that the parent can't even address because they don't even know or what have you. I mean, it's just, it's I'm not going to say it's impossible, but just realistically.
Realistically, if you're going to put an adoption up, I do believe that your first option should be to try to place the child as close to what they're used to as possible. Okay,
yeah.
But don't get me wrong, because I'm going to let you know, we've spoken enough segments to know that, in particular with our people, we're not organized enough for us to, or we're not even volunteering enough to step up and take on that type of responsibility. So if there are black children out there that need to be adopted, there's not really black places that they can go to anymore. That's ideal. On the other hand, I don't expect that any damn agency is going to sit there and disqualify a same culture person who has just as much love as somebody that they consider ideal because of things that a little help would make that situation work. If they have a small apartment, there are plenty of things that adoption agencies and city agencies offer to help that person get a bigger place. Because if the child is best matched with somebody who loves them and is closer to something that's more familiar to them, or will be an easier transition to the already disturbing situation, okay, then nobody should be putting, you know, their personal preferences, their personal ambitions, their restrictions, their narrow-mindedness or anything into the qualification process. And I think that I would have a problem with a perfectly qualified, say, single black mom or single black dad taking on a black child, and for them to disqualify that person and give it to, you know, a couple, like a homosexual couple or a white couple, because they feel there's more physical qualifications in that respect.
Mm.
And I have nothing against anybody for their lifestyle, so I don't want people calling in, "Is that problem with gays?" No, I do not. I'm saying, for the sake of the children people, okay, overall thing is to give them the best shot at the best care scenario that they can have. Love is not enough in this respect. It's not. Love is not enough. If there is something that can be just as much love but has a little bit closer of a match, okay, if everybody is supposed to go through a course, if everybody's supposed to go through background screening, if everybody's supposed to get their background checked and things to that effect, then everybody should be doing so under an equal basis, and that's just the way I feel.
Correct.
I really have a problem with it, because if you look at today's society, even in our schools, they don't teach enough about our black history in schools today.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
Well, Arizona,
you know,
just erased it all together, so, you know.
Right, so they're trying to wipe
Arizona
us out.
Arizona governor just
wanna
erase the black history segment altogether, civil rights era and
right.
all that.
Right.
And her reason was, if black children should read about their history and what took place, they'll become resentful, hostile, and they'll act more like, wait for it, black children.
Is that a
Jeez,
statement?
Thanks.
Did they state that? Wow, I can't believe that.
Yeah that And the real sad thing about it, you don't have enough black families as it is to carry the torch and teach them about our black heritage.
Come
like
on.
They used to be.
Yeah, and I'm
no,
seriously
and that's
considering.
Sad.
I'm seriously considering doing. I'm seriously considering opening a school and doing a school, because I swear, man, you know, I work with these kids every day, and it's sad what's going on in these school systems. They're not teaching them anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have psychology in high school anymore. They don't have music in no school anymore. They don't have any type of cultural basis. The black children here in D.C. is just really, really, really being neglected by the school system. That's why hopefully these academic reinforcement centers and the rest of our black people, come on, we got to really, really, really band together on this. We are really band together on this. Anything that's
mm-hmm.
a child program, really, really get behind it. Really do it, man, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's a status symbol to them. If they can do something for our people, that's a status symbol to them. You see what I mean? When you look at
mm-hmm.
the stage of this economy now.
Right.
So why isn't it that we're not at least acquiring that status symbol? You understand what I mean? Now, look at it.
Right.
Look at it like this. If we are all reaching upwards, right, and
mm-hmm.
you see whenever the you know, the typical American prototype or Caucasian male, whoever makes it, or female, a lot of times they want to do African charities. They want to do things with black faces on it. They want to do good for the black community, quote-unquote, to make themselves look more human. Now, we, on the other hand, neglect ourselves and can't even, don't even try to acquire that little status symbol that it is available out there to get, and we are so silly. There's so many of us are silly that we don't even want to look it in the face and look in the face of the fact that without a culture, we die.
That's right.
That's it. That
identity association is definitely something that humans need. We need to know where we come from. We need to know what we're about. We need to know where we're supposed to connect with and whatever. And then from there, we can branch out and take on different things. You know, if you're a person that's been growing up, you know, all the time, like, you know, your macaroni and cheese, and now you want to try sushi, I mean, that's something that you should be able to do as an optional choice. Something to broaden your horizons, but everybody needs some basic connection. Everybody does. And if you are going to take a person that for some reason their ideal safety net or their ideal connection, which is the parental home, their natural born parents, didn't work out, for whatever reason foster care comes into play, the persons that decide to step up to the plate, and I am speaking on people that are doing this from genuine heartfelt love, okay, who really and truly want to see one person in the world be connected or have a chance, okay? I'm not speaking about those that have ulterior motives, okay? Which, by the way, part two of this segment will be just about that. But what I'm speaking on is just basic. I love this child. I can't have any of my own. This person has a beautiful spirit, or this is a beautiful baby, whatever it is. Whatever the differences are, your job, stepping up to the plate to be the most important role that child is going to have, is to learn everything you need to know to give that child the best steps forward possible. You're already depending on the age, you're already going to have some skepticism. You're already going to have some, you know, some resilience because, you know, this person doesn't know who you are. They've probably been in the foster care system so long that they don't agree that anybody's really going to stick by them. You've got a lot to deal with. And usually people are not just giving up their babies right away, even if the ones that turn out to be unfit as it is.
Right.
So people are not going to get that ideal from scratch candidate. I'll be right with you, Deacon. They're not going to get that ideal candidate, which is a baby, to start from scratch and do it from fresh ground up. So you're usually dealing with either toddlers or not. The same way you need to know about anything that's medically wrong with the child, you need to know about anything that could be culturally disturbing and upset to them. So that is more than just paperwork, and it's more than just a heartfelt desire. There's some work to be done.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Deacon, you were about to say?
Yes, I just want to go off topic just for a few minutes because I want to commend the young man you had on there. Am I pronouncing his name right, Derek?
Yeah,
Derek. Yeah, I just want to say that I'm really proud to say that to hear something like that from a young person that wants to give back and doesn't forget where he comes from. Take a lesson, Jay-Z and Mr. Puffy Combs. That's what you're supposed to do when you are blessed with a certain talent. You ought to be a blessing to somebody else. And for somebody to step forward and do what this young man is trying to do, I have to commend him, and God bless him and his family.
Come on.
All right, I'm sure he's listening. And, Derek, if you're listening, you just heard somebody was noticing. So keep doing what you're doing. This is a hard world, people. If you don't know by now, it's a hard world. And for those of us that, like I said, and I'm going to say it again, and I'll say it every segment, when I'm speaking on a topic, if the shoes don't fit you, gentlemen, can you finish my sentence?
Yes. Don't put the shoe on.
Don't put the shoe on your foot. Please don't do
that. That's right.
You know, please. If you are not a racist, then racism problems don't apply to you. If you are a person that loves everybody equally, then by all means, welcome and help us continue the mission. If you are a person that is tired and sick of seeing the things you see and you want to make a change, this is the way to go. You're listening to me for a reason. Whether you agree or you disagree, you listen. So get out there and let's see what we can do. It's not the big takedown that matters. It's the little stuff. It's the little chips that we do. You know, it's knocking down that liquor store that's by a child's school.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling a person that you heard call somebody a name out of their name that deals with something that produces hatred for you to stop them while you have a chance. And if they're young and talking garbage, guess what? And if you are a person that is one of those wonderful humanitarians that want to really get up there and give a child a shot, give them the best of all parts of the scenario. Give them the worst, give them the best, give them the possibilities, give them the actual facts. Because, you know, knowing is half the battle, as they always say. You cannot show up to a gunfight with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
You can't show up to a gunfight with a knife.
Absolutely. Speaking of weaponry, you know, and you know anybody who is dealing with these kids, like I do, I talked to one of my children yesterday, and you know we were talking about how he used to cuss so bad, right? It was so bad, and you know all of the other employees were, you know, they were confirming it. All the kids were like, yeah, he used to cuss, and he just looked at me and he said, man, I didn't know it was wrong back then. You know, and the kids don't understand if they are surrounded by you just slinging fists all the time. And I'm a product of it. Many of us are, and we're going to be. You know, as many that are going to be, but we can make a big difference, especially if you're dealing with children outside of the public school system, if you're dealing with a charter school, if you're dealing with programming and some type of programming or something otherwise. You have the freedom now because they are taking away African-American studies and the black professionals are not keeping up on their research, so they're not knowing how to approach our children. In these outside public school arenas, this is when we're supposed to teach our children something called code switching. For anybody who works with children, code switch, we need to teach them when to say this and when not to say that. And don't correct them all the time, but appreciate where they're coming from. All right, but just show them that there's a difference, and you have a native language, but your native language isn't necessarily the formal or the written language. All right.
Right.
But we don't have people that are approaching our children correctly, and I just hope, like you said, we need guns instead of knives. So we have a lot of people out here knives, dull blades, instead of being up on how you're supposed to do this. Now we have that have that responsibility because most people agree that the public schools aren't going to do it, right?
Right,
I agree. They're going to put you in the trash can as soon as they get a chance. You're going to be the first one, so supposedly called emotionally ED. You're going to be the first ED child to be put in a special education classroom and you don't even belong there or put in the trash.
Right.
Well, I do have another caller in, which I'll bring in just a minute. Caller, thank you for waiting. I'll be right with you. There are so many things that the schools themselves are failing the children with. I don't know if all of you noticed the post that I put up there where now, you know, there was a black child that was denied a free lunch in school because apparently the reduced meal account was dry or something, and they took the food from in front of this child and threw it in the garbage, telling them, you don't have enough money in your account. For a free meal? Are you kidding me?
What?
Oh,
for a free meal? Are you kidding me?
Or if that was my child, I would sue the Board of Education.
Okay, so we have that going on.
Oh,
and then
shit.
You know, this is the thing that you have to teach this child that's coming in, that, you know, for some reason people have a problem with you because you're different. People might have a problem with you because there are certain things that they have that is different on you. So if you don't go in fully cocked, fully informed, and willing to share the bad part of life, because we are seeing a lot more of that than we're ever seeing what we grew up with. I mean, fights don't even end anymore. You can have a fight in 2011 and somebody will extract revenge in 2015. You know, so these are things that you got to teach the children nowadays, so culture and other things are involved. Let me bring in our other panelists. They've been waiting a little bit. Welcome to the show, Coley. You're on the air.
You know, I was looking at the topic of your show.
Okay, welcome. Am I speaking with?
This is Pianki calling from the Midwest.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
Pianki calling from the Midwest.
Hi, welcome.
Hi. Yeah, and you're talking about the cause of the loss of cultural identity. And it depends. Now, of course, chauvinists adopted in the United States, and you do lose some of cultural identity. A black child or, say, a Native American child is adopted by a non-Native American couple here in the United States, and that rarely do happen. But, yes, they do stand a chance to lose their cultural values because the adoptees don't know it.
Hold on.
Right.
And I've seen a case where a white couple, well, actually, this white friend of mine, his son and daughter adopted his son and his wife. Son's wife adopted a Haitian child, and they renamed the child and called him McKinley.
Oh, wow.
And I said, John, why did they do that? I mean, you taking the child away from his strong cultural history. Why did they name him McKinley? So, yes, the possibility of that does happen. And that's why some countries don't allow their children to be adopted by, outside concerns. And I think it's behooving them to do that.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Sweetheart, say your name again for me one more time.
Pardon me?
I said, say your name for me again once more.
My name is Pianki.
Oh, Pianki, that's pretty. What you brought up, one culture in particular that's a very great example of keeping it in the culture, and that's Native Americans. They are very much involved with keeping it in the family. You could have a 0.2% blood of Native American, and you are covered by their laws. And they're a very well-sustaining, self-sustaining community. Despite what their past was, despite what was happening to them, they have their own government. Does the United States even recognize that they have their own commerce? They have their own banking and finances. So, yeah, absolutely. And I definitely agree with what you're saying. You're already naming the child something different that's more acceptable or more whatever. Why would you do that? You didn't go in there picking up a child named McKinley. And can you mind sharing how old the child was?
Well, the child was young. I don't think the child was 10 years old. I think he was, a very young child out of Haiti.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, were they old enough to be able to speak and understand, when you're saying something to them, they can answer, or were they babies?
No, it wasn't babies. It was
maybe
6 years old, something like that.
You know your slave.
Wow. See, that already tells them something different. That already tells them my name's not good enough. What is wrong with who I am? That already does. And as they get older, they start understanding and putting things together when they start seeing the bad world around them. So you're saying that you love me enough to take me on, but not as I am. And that's a really bad thing. That's another con to what they call transracial adoption. Somebody trying to say something?
Yeah, and what if those parents are institutionally racist and maybe they don't even know? What if that is the case? What if every time a discussion in the household has to do with an indigenous African culture, it's degraded and defiled in front of the child? But when you talk to the child, you're just as good. Just stuff like that doesn't work, and it happens all the time. And she just, oh Lord. Mm-mm-mm. And I don't even like talking to hypotheticals.
Well, you know what goes on with the policies of the United States. The United States will go around the world and start wars and start mayhem, which causes disruption and chaos, people to get killed. And when it's all said and done, then you got a whole bunch of orphan children. Then the next thing you know, they're being adopted by Americans. I always ask the question, because Americans adopt whoever they want to. But you got enough Americans here who don't have families. But why would you go all around the world and try to adopt somebody else's children, especially after you've called the very mayhem and conditions that made them orphans?
Yes.
Jeremy, excellent point. Excellent points you made all the way through. You're absolutely right.
That's right.
Mayhem. Now you want to push it under the rug. And I don't know how often you listened in, but in my state of New York, there was a particular mayor that, thank God, the jerk is out of office, but he didn't care to reform the city. He cared to reform the city to his personal preferences. He didn't clear up homelessness. He shoved the homeless people under a rug so that the rich and financially stable wouldn't see that dirty eyesore. You know, you have people here trying to stop health care for poor people that they'd rather shut down the government. So you're absolutely right. Why would you go around the world to bring somebody into that and still not teach them better things or a complete way of being? Absolutely correct. And, I mean, thank you for that. There's another panelist, and let me bring them in. Hang on, gentlemen. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, KD. And, another panel. This is Al-Tariq.
Right,
Al-Tariq. Yeah, right. Deacon Stallone and our new panelist tonight. This is a very good topic that y'all speaking on, and I'm glad I got to listen to a lot of it. It's like when you have children and the way that things are happening today, I remember listening to something, and it was by Mumia Abu-Jamal, and it was about the prison system and how the children relate to it, you know, how it's connected. And then you see how the schools are shutting down, like I had mentioned, and stuff like that. I remember one time now when I was younger and I was in school, I had got in some trouble. So I had a tutor come to my house because I had a fight. And after that, then they suspended me for like 45 days because the guards got all involved with it and stuff like that. So one day, the teacher had a nerve to say to me, and I told my mother about this, because I was trying to tell her something about what I may want to be involved in, you know, growing up as far as the field and stuff like that, you know, career. And then she said, no, you'd probably be better off being like a sanitation man, you know, garbage man. So I told my mother about that. She went off on that lady, and she could never come back again. You know, wow. And I mean, the way that they indoctrinate the children, but if you look at it, you really can't be mad at them per se because they didn't want to teach us really anyway, you know, from a historical perspective. You know, so the kids get left out just because of that fact. And at a certain age, I had seen something just off a rap video. I think it was Foul Munch and Styles P. And it was called on the Black Hand Side. And the thing they said near the end was that your scores by the time you hit the fourth grade determines just how much they're going to be able to have certain kids in prison by the time, you know, by the time they get to a certain age, after the fourth grade. And I said, oh, my God. So it's really things being put in motion that a lot of us don't even see, you know. And I feel bad for the kids who are coming up where of course, it'll take away from the culture. And I believe it's just like basically like what Malcolm said. When you don't have knowledge of who you are, he said you have amnesia. And that's true. You have amnesia because you don't know your culture, you don't know your mother tongue, you don't really know your father tongue, and they did a number on us. So, you know, we have to really teach our kids. We do have to start getting more into the school teaching. We have to teach them history. Of course, it has to be history, but then it has to be in a way that we can show them how it's relevant to today and the effects of it, how to counter it, and all that stuff like that, you know. And those, when we start doing that, it'll be better for those who learn it. Everybody, of course, can't do it, but we have to start somewhere, as you always say, Katie. We have to keep pushing this, you know, the movement to elevate our children, or it won't be no future for them. Right.
Absolutely out to week. And two things you touched on. Funny you brought up Malcolm when you were speaking about the amnesia situation. If you remember in his biography movie, one of the things his teachers told him was that the things he dreamed of being wasn't suitable for him. And he turned out to be one of the most prominent leaders, you know, for us as a stud. You know, and that's one thing. And the other thing is, you're right. And if you're saying what happened to you, what happened with you being with your natural mother, okay, back to, you know, on the topic, imagine what a parent who's taking in another culture and decides to try to, as Diami just said, okay, change the name, try to fit them into a culture they weren't born into. Imagine how much more trauma on that child that's going to be, and what was said to you, you're at the age you are, and you still remember it.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And it's adoptive kids that are adopted, like I said, by close match scenarios already have a sense of confusion or curiosity as to who their parent was. Why did they leave me? What happened? Why was I not good enough? Why did I wind up in the situation? What's going to happen when there's the additional content with interracial adoption if the person coming in doesn't educate themselves or doesn't expose the child to that diversity, the culture that they're being raised by, as well as where they came from?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a problem. I do have to take a sponsor break, ladies and gentlemen. I will be back in just 4 minutes, so hang out with me, okay?
All right.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
Come on. You know the song. You know the words. So put your hands together. Come on, everybody. Come on, sing with me.
Glory and honor.
Every nation,
Lord of heaven.
to come on. I need every voice in this place tonight to sing with me. Say yeah, 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 yeah. Come on. Say yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Say yeah.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. That was Jonathan Butler with It All Belongs to You, a little bit of getting back to the roots that we have definitely lost. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking on this topic, Who Am I? Does interracial adoption cause loss of identity and cultural and racial identification in children? And we have a marvelous panel tonight of gentlemen coming in, and everything they have said have been very, very fruitive to this conversation. So those of you that are able to join in, I see we do have a new panelist in as well. Actually, two. I'm going to bring them all in one at a time, so just hang out with me one sec. Stable, are you back? Hello? Sorry, Deacon, are you listening? Okay, Deomi, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm having a hard time hearing everybody. Okay. Al-Tariq, are you back?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Deacon and Stalo, are you there? Okay, I think I lost them, even though I see them. All right, gentlemen, before I bring in our next two panelists, I want to thank you both and the other two very much for all that you have said. You brought up some valid and important points. And I want to thank you, Al-Tariq, for sharing your experience, because that's definitely something that, as much as it happened to you back in your day, happens now and probably to the 10th power. Because at least back then you had a village that can go and defend you and show you there was a change. And you had a well-informed mom that gave somebody with a limited mind pretty much a taste of their own medicine and let them know people out there aren't as submissive as you think. Now, we do have two more panelists, and let me bring them in.
All right.
Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, darling. Hang on. There's somebody behind you.
Hey, darling.
Actually, two more people. Hold on one second. Okay. Darlene?
Yes?
All right. What's your take on tonight's topic, honey?
I totally agree with that, that it does have an impact on the individual's growth because it's a mixture of different beliefs, faith, understanding, life theories, the whole kit and caboodle, you know. It confuses the child because if the child was, say the child became in foster care at a young age, like 7, 8, he still had time to grasp onto some things that his mother believed in or she raised him up on. And then when he switches over and goes into a different and whole new environment, he learns all new things because they don't know how we really live. You know, they don't know that much. They don't know that part about us. They know us economically. They know us as far as work. They know us as far as mental skills, talented, creative. They know the basics, the outer appearance of us. But on the inside, they have no clue on how we really live. And I think that keeps them kind of sort of confused, because they would like to know, just like we don't know how they live because we're not in their home, just like they're not in our home. So they had to find a way to get in to our homes. You know what I'm saying? Because they didn't have the right to, like, just come into our homes and just take our children and blah, blah, blah. So they had to put something in place where they can have some more control. Okay, we need to go inside and find out how they really live. You know,
as I said, I think that you really, I mean, your obligation as an adoptive parent who's truly trying to give a child in an unideal situation some chance at being back to idealism. And the thing is, you cannot, listen, I have a Puerto Rican mother, okay? She was born and raised in Puerto Rico. They didn't speak a lick of English, but she's been living in America since she was a teenager, and if I'm 40-something, you know she's not young. So The thing is this. If you choose to go to a place and make it your permanent home and it's a different culture than yours, whose responsibility is it for you to understand where you are? It's yours. You have to make the choice to learn the cultures and ways of the people you choose to live with. It's the same thing as bringing a child that's not of where you come from, and bringing them in to help them understand not only what they're about, but where they're going to be. But you don't rob one of the other. Now, understand, like I did say, my mom was a Spanish-speaking, only Spanish-speaking Puerto Rican. She still has a very thick accent, but she can communicate in English very well. Okay? It's your job to not live in a city for, you know, 97 years and never learn the language. The same, nor do you want to give up where you came from, because that's what your family and your culture is. So if you choose to be in a place that you weren't raised in or born in, your responsibility is to learn the language or learn the cultures. It's the same way for someone who's not old enough to make that decision.
Right.
Okay, you don't want to take away where they came from, but they do need to understand they're living in a different place now. Your job as a parent who's their protector now, who's their next guidance, okay, is to make sure they can embrace all things and not lose sight of who they are. You understand?
Right.
And clearly, if the shades of their skin, okay, is on a whole different end of the spectrum, that already raises the question: why are you white skinned and I'm dark skinned? Daddy's not dark skinned. Mommy's not dark skinned. Where did that come from? So if you're going to sit there and go, no, just don't look at that. You can't say that. But all of you see the Disney cartoon movie Tarzan?
Right.
All of you on the panel, did you see the Disney version of Tarzan?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember when the apes finally started to let them know, and I think the father ape had said, you know, he's not like us, he's not one of us?
Right.
And the mother tried to say to him, look at your heart, look at our hands, we have the same thing. It made him feel better for a while, but eventually he found out that there were human beings in life.
Right.
And that he looked like those human beings. You cannot stop what's going to happen if you're bringing a person in that clearly is from a different place. So your job, she loved him anyway. She loved him to death. She lost her own baby, and he was just a baby in her eyes. But the point is, there were differences. And this is not taken away from the ability for anybody to love a child. And honestly, my viewpoint is this. If all the ideal things that you try to look for to place this child with does not also bring love along with it, and that child has to give up a couple of things in the beginning, like it's a learning process for both of you, but they'll have love on the way, I'll take that.
I'll
take that. I'd rather child have love and people are a little ignorant in some things than for that person to be told, ignore what you came from, I love you anyway.
Well, even at that point, Katie, what happened is that when a female had a child, she bore a child and she gave birth to it and brought it into the world. And if she wasn't in position to take care of the child, a family member would be there to say, you know what, I'll help you. If she reaches out and says, well, I'm struggling, well, I'll help you. But it's not like that no more. So now they branch out and, you know, they even... Not even so much as you think that only, like, rich people adopt black children. No, the Caucasians adopt the black children. No, it's not like that. When I had to deal with a situation where, you know, this was a Caucasian family, and it was like every black child that was in the system was appointed to a Caucasian family, and they filled them up with drugs at a very young age, you know, and caused more confusion in their life. It wasn't structured for that. I heard at one time, like, the most important thing was to help the mother get back her children so she could, you know, sustain a family and be this a productive member of society, so to speak. It's not like that anymore. It's not like that.
Right.
Now, whoever adopt your kids, oh, your mother ain't no good. Oh, that's why y'all with me. Oh, this and this and that. You didn't see children negative stuff about their parents or try to turn their parents against
right.
them.
Right.
Mm.
You did. And the whole, like we were speaking on earlier, all of these things are already go with child rearing. Let's take the,
yeah.
like I said, if we're taking off the racial aspect, let's even take the adoptive aspect off of it and go back a step. Because even with that, it still applies.
Mm-hmm.
You have the heart as a natural parent to try to teach them the rose-colored glasses got to come off now. You got to see things as they are. You know, you have to see the bad stuff as well as the good stuff. You know, the boo-boos don't, you know, kissing the boo-boos don't work after a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say smart things. It's no longer baking cookies or buying them something to eat or taking them to the movies, McDonald's or whatever the case is. It's not the magical Band-Aid anymore. Now they're really seeing life. So what do you do as a parent? Now let's go to adoptive parent without race factor in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're dealing with that already, plus the fact that this child knows that there's a difference, plus the neighborhood that he or she lives in knows that the couple that was there before didn't have to be there. Now who you are, I don't know where that's coming from.
You have the background noise.
But I will say that now, like I said, next step up, adoptive parents that don't have a racial problem, but a race problem in the mix. Now they got to deal with what already comes hard for a natural parent with their natural child, okay? Now you got to deal with that, plus now all the other aspects that come in from the fact that the kids know you're new, the people of the parents that are friends of the parents knew they didn't have a kid and they know the situation. Now you got to deal with that. Now let's take that and add on the race factor involved. If you are not fully equipped for this war, and you're not trying to get educated in it, and you think you're going to sweep all the bad things under the rug or try to, you know, dress up a boy doll to make it look like a Barbie doll, we have problems. And all the amount of love is not going to fix it. You're going to have these children walking around half associated with their identity, period. Kids grow up to not know how to deal with the things you should have taught them and didn't. You
right.
don't know now how to deal with it because you didn't take the time out to educate yourself. You were busy trying to push all that stuff under the rug for either your own personal reasons or what you felt would be protecting them from others. Now there's a problem because now this person who already isn't your biological child and may already have a blockage between you and them has something bigger. So here we go. Your job, even love doesn't fix everything in this respect. Love doesn't conquer all in this respect. This is a whole new broad spectrum.
Yes.
And if you don't know that there are many twists and turns in just regular parenting, you're taking on a personality that you can't even say, you know, you're just like your father, I have an uncle like you, or you're just like this. You don't know where this person's anger comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand that this is the way maybe that the culture they come from reacts, or that's what they were taught, depending on the age they were brought into the household.
Right.
You have a lot to deal with already trying to be a parent. But to be a parent from somebody that you're just meeting for the first time, second time, third time, a couple of meet and greets during the adoption process, that's not going to do it. Your job is to roll up your gloves and put your hands in the mud. You got to get down and dirty with the elbow grease to figure out what the hell you're going to do the right thing by this child and by yourself and to yourselves as well. Because then the next thing you know, this child that was plucked from the foster care system now has to go back because you can't deal with it. Bringing up, listen, I'm going to bring up one small thing, which we're not going to elaborate on today because that's in part two. But look at what just took place with Madonna and her son. Went all the way around to go all over the world or do whatever it was she did. And the minute that this child got on her nerves in a way she couldn't take it, what came out of her mouth to the person she supposedly was giving a new life to was the nigger word. And funny thing is, I didn't see any more follow-up posts. If this had been Michael Jordan talking to a white child, that would have been news and news and news and backup news and internet news, and now it's coming through your phone news, and you're going to hear about it in some spam email news, all of this stuff. Well, Madonna, who's already a the Lady Gaga's start-off point, nobody's talking about any of that. And if this boy should grow up resenting what she said and act out, who do you think is going to get the knife? It's not going to be his raunchy sexual mother who calls him this word. It's not going to be that he's just a troubled kid trying to find his way like they gave Miley Cyrus when she was gyrating with a foam finger. It's going to be this little black kid that Madonna adopted.
But you know what, Katie, I'm going to say this and be quiet. I was just discussing that with my twin sister, and I was saying, you know what, it doesn't bother you when you're coming up to a point where it causes a depression. You know, some people, I can't say that. I'll take that back because some people handle pressure different from others. But it didn't dawn on me. I'll put it on me. You know, I was always curious about where we came from, who our grandmother was. All my grandparents died before I was born. So I missed that part. I longed to have a grandmother or a great-grandmother in my life, that knowledge, that wisdom that they, you know, to have. You know, I missed out on that. And
even the
even as an adult, it still bothers me because now I'm a grandmother, and like I, when my grandchildren sit and we talk about family, and the furthest back I could go is like, well, all I know is my grandmother's name was so and so and so, you know.
Right.
And then I was saying to my twin, I said, you know what, twin? Are you know that Antique Roadshow that come on TV?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know the Antique Roadshow? I used to watch that so I could see the antiques that came through, right?
Yeah.
But then after I started hearing the people talking about their answer, well, this came from my great-great-great-great-great-grandmother when the World War II, and you know, and everybody that comes on that show is of a light skin color, right? And they know their history. So I'm like, well, all of these people in the Antique Roadshow could tell their history. Well, my great aunt's cousin's uncle Junior, little brother Tommy, you know, left me this like 13,000 years ago, and I just held on to it. I want to see how much it's worth. Oh, well, it's worth maybe $13,000-$15,000. You know, I'm like, where is our history? We didn't have nothing. And as an adult, I watch it because it takes me in that space where, you know what? Like, wow. Our history was just erased.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, there are two more panelists to come in, and I need to bring them in because we're winding down to the last half of the show. So hold on just a second. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hi, Katie.
Hey, Arlene. Hang on. There's one behind
you.
Hey,
Arlene.
Hey, D.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello? Yes, hi. Hello?
Oh, hey, okay. This is Professor Carl Tone Jones.
Hey, Professor.
Hey, Professor.
Hey,
you're
how's it going?
All right, hold on. I'm going to have your take.
Well, I'm going to go somewhere where I don't know if anybody want to go with me, but I'm going anyway. Can you imagine a Caucasian person saying to a black child, well, my father owned your father's mother's brother's cousin, and, you know, they were slaves, and they picked cotton in the field, and, you know, they was raped by my granddad and had his babies and, you know, and all of that, and then you was born. People are not going to go there. Some nationalities are not going to go there with a interracial child because, one, they probably don't want the child to see them in a different light.
Okay.
Because if you told me some stuff like that and, you know, you adopted me, okay, thank you very much, but I don't like you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This is where you came from. This is how you treated our people, and this is what you did. So it would give a child, depending on their age, of course, a negative connotation. And I think more people are afraid of what a child might think, and they always say, oh, well, it's in the best interest of the child. You're a damn liar. It's in the best interest of you that this child stays stupid and dumb and ignorant and oblivious to the truth. Because the reality is there's more white people adopting our black children than there are black people adopting white children. So our children are always going to get the doodle end of the stick because white people are not going to sit them down and really talk to them about their history because they don't want them to know the truth. And the reason why they don't is to protect themselves, and they need to stop with that. Oh, well, I'm doing what's in the best interest of the child. Listen, if the child needed bone marrow, blood, or anything like that, you couldn't do a damn thing for them.
Right.
Okay? So the only thing you can do is give them a bed, give them some clothes, give them a meal. That's all you could do for them because if it's anything more than that that they would need from you, you would fail. And the adoption agencies need to stop with the crap and be realistic because I don't care how crappy a mother is or a father is. The bottom line is if that child gets sick for any reason, you're going to have to call them or either that child is going to be distinct. You understand what
okay.
I'm saying? Because
yes.
DNA don't change, bone marrow don't change, none of that. And, you know, God forbid, you know, you don't know where a child comes from when you adopt them. You don't know their background history. You don't know their medical history. You could be taking on a child with sickle cell. You could be taking on a child with mental issues. You could be taking on a child with a whole lot of other issues, and you don't even know that they have them until they get a little older. And then after they get a little older, you stuck because either you're going to be real about it or you're not. And you're going to try to help that child or you're not going to try to help that child. So the reason you adopted them, I think people are adopting kids just so they could be in the spotlight to say, I did this for a black kid. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of the adoptions are for the wrong reason.
Arlene, that's for another time, that part right there. I wanted to just touch on something that you said with regards to, you know, them not teaching. I agree with you on the respect that nobody wants to sit down with the black child that they've adopted and have the civil rights history talk. But what I'm saying is this. There's ways to make sure that
a child's culture that's not of yours, that you've adopted, can still be in that child's life without you having to break out the history. And then again, if you're truly in it for the love of the child, there's ways to even handle that talk. Like you said, they might look at the adoptive parent knowing that they're of the same race or whatever it is that was the oppressor. But guess what? If that person really loves the child, they'll listen, look, that it is a true thing, it's a horrible thing, it's a sad thing, but that wasn't me. It was my people, and yes, even in my family, there's bad people too. But I love you, and this is not me, and this is what happened, and this is what took place. And when you get out of that world, this is what's going to happen. But if you're trying to take a child, like I said a little bit earlier, that has been used to eating, you know, for lack of sounding stereotypical, ladies and gentlemen, I should say at the risk of sounding stereotypical. If they're used to eating fried chicken or they're used to eating, you know, tuna fish sandwiches and macaroni and cheese and things like that, and they go to a culture where they're eating, you know, a sliver of sushi, or they're eating, you know, this type of fruit that nobody's ever heard of in their world, okay? And that's what you're trying to bring the child to and erase the other stuff. That's mm-hmm. taking away from what could be in an ideal situation. There's nothing that, you know, you can do if there's a situation in foster care that was so bad that the ideal parents, the biological parents, really were not good for the child. We saw one where a woman was selling her newborn baby for sex 8 times. In that situation, I don't care if the person is as black as the ace of spades, you're not going to send that child back to that person simply because exactly. That's their natural mother and she's black. I'm not speaking on that. And you guys all know me with my viewpoint. I don't go with one thing simply because I'm that thing. All right? But what I'm saying is, when it's a situation, and I'm not speaking on the extremes, let's talk about the situation where it is strictly from that person's point of love and true heartfelt desire to have a child in their life, maybe because they couldn't have any.
Right.
And maybe
because
they couldn't get a newborn baby. I'm speaking on that. When that child is brought into that person's home and that person is not black or Chinese or Native American or Russian, their job is to know what they need to know as much as they can about that person's culture and make sure that child has connections with that culture. And
that's
people pay for the work.
But see, that's what I was saying, Katie. I think people are adopting for the wrong reasons. It's not, for a lot of the kids, it's not about love, and it's not about their culture, and it's not about where they came from.
It's not about real love.
You know what I'm saying? Because, again, like you said, if
it's
they care, they would teach them regardless. But you know what? They probably, a lot of them are probably feeling like, you know, black people are not proud. Like, we're an ashamed race. So why would they, like, impose that on their child? You understand what I'm saying? It's like, you're ashamed to be black. So why would they take the time to find out about our history and things of that nature if they don't even want the child to acknowledge that they're black from the beginning? Because it's not something to be proud of per se.
Today's topic is about the people that are adopting because of love and need to have knowledge of the culture. As I said earlier, part two is tomorrow. And with the further problems of the kind of interracial adoptions, and there's going to be quite a few scenarios brought up in not tomorrow, the next segment. But today is about just standard tradition of adopting from a place of love, or whatever the reason is, and why. First of all, but I do want to address something, and then Professor, I'm going to bring you in. One of the things I will say is that the same way we tell our children that the best way to avoid getting pregnant or avoid getting STDs is to practice abstinence, okay? It's the same way that if our people got together and put themselves in a position where they can take in children that are in an unideal situation in foster care, that if one parent didn't do the right thing, the village is there to pick it up. Well, we cut our own village off as well as had it cut off for us. Mm-hmm. So there's not enough of us to be able to be in a position to fight the way our ancestors once could. So part of that is on us too. We are practically giving away the slots, the rights, the seats, if you want to call it that, to be there to say, hell no, I want that one to come here. Maybe the mother's not there, but I've known the mother for years, so I know all that there is to know about this child, and I'll sneak them in. Can they actually have some credentials behind them? And I'm not speaking PhDs. I'm speaking, I know this child. I have a good home. I've got a job. These are my views. This is the way I raised them. I don't believe in having sex before marriage. I'm going to make sure that I'm involved with their schooling. I'm going to make sure that when they go out, I know where they are, who they're with, what they're doing, and when they should be back. We don't have that village anymore, and we're not trying to get there because it's us on this panel that's still talking about the yesteryear. It's us.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but there are people out there that have good intentions and don't have good backup plans, and that is the problem.
Right.
But as far as preventing interracial adoption, in particular for black American children, okay, or for black children, period, to those that we don't want them to have them, we're not in a position by choice at some point and by fear at other points of being that village that's strong enough to say, no. But the Lord says we have the right to do this and that this is what's required. We've taken this course. We've known all of this. What's the problem with you qualifying us to bring this child back into something that they're more familiar with?
Yes.
You can weigh in.
You're right. You have to have some kind of knowledge of who you are in order to be 100% as an adult and in order to teach your own children, you know, where your the history. When you don't know who you are, it's like really sad. It's really sad.
I will point out one more thing, and then I have to give the mic to Professor because we're winding down the show. One more thing I do want to point on that you said was that they don't want them to be black in the first place, or they want to love them, but in a different way. If you are adopting from love, true love, and you want that child to have a full-fledged life, your needs are put to the side.
Right.
Even a natural parent does that. Your needs go after your child, even though at some point you have to take a time out to remember that you're still a human being and a parent. But your first instinct is to do for your child first. All your decisions that you make in life, you think of how it will affect your child when you are a true parent. You don't try to eliminate or eradicate your individuality, but when any parent, natural instinct is to do right for their child first. So if an adoptive parent wants to step into the role and be as much of a natural parent as possible minus the blood, then that's going to be their feeling as well, or should be anyway. Professor, thank you for waiting. You have the floor.
Okay. Well, a lot was said, and wow, how do I follow all this up? I was actually going to sit this show out and just be an observer, but just listening, Stalo said something that struck a nerve, and I love listening to the brothers' talks and sisters' talk because this show is just so informative on so many different levels. Everybody brings something unique but needed and necessary to the panel. So, one of the things that you guys were talking about was the lack of history that takes place. And one of the things I thought about was the fact that as a therapist, because I'm also a therapist, I work with families, and I deal with families with adopted children. There are several things that I see in every single case, and this is whether it's race-related or not. Is the fact that, the children themselves always suffer from this misplaced rage. And the misplaced rage is because they're angry because they feel abandoned by their original parents.
Mm-hmm.
And often the person that they need to confront is nowhere to be found. So they often take that anger and confront other people. Mainly their parents and the parents that have taken them in as adopted parents. Now,
mm-hmm.
A problem that goes along with this is there is no school of training that prepares parents to take in children who they adopted. So You know, you never know what issues you may be dealing with when you get the child. But in the same token, you don't. There's not even preliminary steps that are taken so that people can observe or have an opportunity to address the needs of the children. So you have that. Now, think about this for a second, because Arlene, you brought up something that was very key, and there was also something I'm going to tie it into something that the brother from the Midwest called in and said, you know, in terms of the school tracking system. But when you talk about the history and you talk about the disconnect, you know, our European neighbors who are Americans here who fancy themselves in adopting black children, well, take that aside, they don't even like to acknowledge history themselves because of their place in history. So they don't acknowledge the shameful parts of history that don't make them look well, that that don't represent them in a good fashion. I mean, you could just this, you know, you see it in the cinema, where you always see a nice, well-to-do family, but there's always some deep, dark secret that they're not willing to die for, but they'll kill you for it to maintain that secret. Well, that's the same way that the white community is with their history. You know, they don't want to glamour or gloss over the parts of history that make them look unfavorable. So you can only imagine how intensified or how that may be intensified when you have a child that's born of a different race that your predecessors profited off of enslaving. So, you know, that conversation, I guarantee you, is never going to happen. Or if it happens, it's going to happen very rarely. So, and there's a movie that ties into that. If you ever get a chance to see the movie Rabbit Proof Fences, Rabbit Proof Fences is about how the Europeans went into Australia and nearly wiped out all of the Aborigines. And what happened is they had people who were raping the natives, and the natives were coming up with mixed-blooded children. So they decided to place the children into re-education centers, and their goal was to maintain the melanin that the children had, so all the benefits from the melanin in the gene pool, but grafting the physical elements out of the child by the third generation. So that by the third generation, the children would look 100% European, but they would still maintain, you know, that a high percentage of that melanated DNA. Now, why is that important? Because when you do research and you look at the science and the history of the white population, the Caucasoid, you find that they are recessive in their gene, meaning their gene pool dies off after several generations, and they need to find a way to regenerate it. You already know one of the top reasons why you have so many black adoptions by white families is because whites are producing at a negative rate right now. So, you know, if you keep having generation after generation where you're not producing at least 2.3 children, then what happens is eventually you'll die out. So, and that is very prevalent, because at the point right now, white families are producing 1.8 children per couple. So they're not producing enough children to maintain their population, let alone increase it. So the whole tie into the culture is to maintain the dominant white culture by taking the best gene pools in the DNA of the adopted children, and then once you take away their culture, they'll try to fit into white society. They'll be docile because they'll be outnumbered, and you know what happens to those children is unfortunate, because a lot of those children grow up angry at black people because they feel abandoned by their race. And so it's a big thing right now. And don't think for a second that this is not happening on a national level where these discussions are not taking place. These parenting clubs, these are periodicals, are writing news stories all over the country. They're just in places we don't look. They're in conservative newspapers. They're having you know, they're in meeting places like the Council on Foreign Relations, where you have these big pushes, the big push like by people like Brad Pitt and Angela Jolie, or Angelina Jolie, and all these different organizations that study this stuff. You know, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes things that go on we really are not privy to, but there are things that happen. Now, when you talk about what happens to the children that do get adopted and it doesn't work out, then, Arlene, that goes back to the medicated children, the children who are placed on the psychotropic drugs or are placed on Ritalin, which is another word for speed. So you're getting these children addicted to drugs at a young age, taking drugs that only parent, adults should be prescribed to take. And honestly, you shouldn't even be taking them. But that's another story for another day. And what happens is there is a tracking system that's involved with the standardized test. So I had a lecture yesterday at a high school in South Philadelphia, and you can see it on YouTube. I've even posted on the Edge shows listeners lab.
Yeah, that's the video you just sent me?
Yes. So
I meant to tell you it was awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. It was absolutely awesome.
I appreciate that. And one of the things we talked about is the prison industrial complex and how they prepare to build these prisons. They build these prisons 10, 20, 30 years in advance. And how do they know how many prisons they're going to have? Well, they do it by tracking the children from the standardized test. In fact, the whole purpose of having standardized testing is so that they can make sure that the program is working, so that they can always make things profitable. As I stated inside of the lecture, which is called Chess Not Checkers, the game is Chess Not Checkers, is basically, as black people, we were never brought to this country to be citizens anyway. We were only brought here to be for the European to profit off of us. And once slavery was over, they had to reshuffle the deck and come up with the prison industrial complex. So they found a new way. That's why the 13th Amendment is written in such a way that as soon as you get arrested, you could become a slave again.
Right.
So you know, it's all in there. It's all in. I cover all that, you know, when I get into the lecture. But the bottom line is when our children are at such a disadvantage, let's just be honest. Being raised in black families, we have blacks that run from black culture and black history because they're afraid to teach it because they're afraid of, you know, the backlash of white supremacy. So they're afraid of that. So we have blacks that run away from our culture and our history. Besides, if you know something about it, you have to do something about it. There's an innate responsibility that comes with knowledge and gained information. So, you know, it's better for us to not know it. So many of us don't do it. So you can only imagine how that's amplified when one of our children is adopted by one of them who has no intention of sharing our history with, with our children. There's a movie called Banished, and I keep telling people to go check this movie out, Banished. It's very easy to find. You can find it on Amazon, or you can find it if you have, like, Xfinity Cable or whatever. It's on demand right now as we speak on the Stars Network. And if you check this movie out, you'll see how in each of the towns that burned down black prosperous communities and generations later you have the white people, the white community who actually were responsible for that living off of the profits of that land and those resources and how they have hidden those histories. And they refuse to discuss those histories because they're not very proud of it. They don't even want historical markers up stating that the catastrophes took place, you know. So you can only imagine if you're having a baby inside of your house or a small child inside of your house and you know that part of the history, and they're not going to tell our children this. They're going to shield them. They're going to hide them. They're going to Americanize them.
So you do agree that there's a loss of cultural and racial identity with interracial adoption?
Oh, at the very least. Let's not say lost. How about erased? How about lack to acknowledge? You know,
well, there
how
was
about,
a part two to this on my next segment, which is Monday. And there will be a part two to this because what I am going to be doing is putting the celebrities who go across the land to find these children on the table, on the microscope, because I have very mixed views about it, and there's certain things certain questions that I have about it, and that will come up, like I said then. Also, people who adopt for, as Arlene brought up, wrong reasons, the ulterior motives behind a lot of stuff, because there are plenty, and how our adoption system allows for this to happen. So these are things that if it's not helping our people wake up, or people who are out there who are sick and tired, like I said, of being sick and tired, of the things that keeps going around and around and around and coming back to the same old garbage ending. Okay? Hopefully this will do something.
Well, you know, Katie, you know, I've been thinking about this, and, you know, I had a lecture with the youth yesterday. These were high school students, and it bothered me that, I mean, many of them took great interest in it, but, you know, I wanted people out there taking notes. I wanted to see, you know, from what I found out, they did start, they are going to have like a Black History program that was inspired by the lecture, so I'm appreciative of that. But, you know, we have to find a way to instill some civic pride in being Black, because if the Black community felt as proud to be Black as they do, as proud to be a fan of the New York Knicks, a fan of the New England Patriots, a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, people ride those things. I mean, a guy got shot on the subway here in Philadelphia because the Bulls lost one time recently. So if you can only imagine how if we had that type of, found a way to instill that type of civic pride within our community that we have for these sports and movie and entertainers, could you imagine how powerful that would be?
Well, I'm going to agree with you on that, and I'm going to go one step further, because we spoke about why, you know, a lot of the interracial adoptions are happening and that we have an outrage about it, but not an outrage for movement. And one of the things that I will say is this. I came back home about two nights ago from the Knicks game, okay, working the Knicks game. It's late, but the train, I was expecting to get home, you know, wasn't coming for another 20 minutes. So I went downstairs. Now, Arlene, Darlene, and Deacon, you are all familiar with the New York system. Carl, I don't know if you've been in New York, you know, without a car. But the transit system requires something called the MetroCard, okay? It's a car fare ticket, if you want to call it that. You swipe it, you get in, you know, you go around. Okay, now, we've complained and talked and beefed about how there are so many ways that we can organize enterprises and organize entrepreneurships and do certain things, right? Everybody doesn't want to move. However, as tired and sore as I was, and aggravated as hell that I had to wait almost half an hour just to get to the train that's going to connect me to still take a bus and have to still walk 10 minutes, here's the deal. How I'm downstairs in trying to add money to this card, and I've got five grown brothers downstairs trying to sell me a swipe on a card. Meanwhile, I'm headed over to the machine to add my own money to swipe myself for my own thing, and they know that if they get caught doing this, they're in trouble. But if you have that much of commitment and resourceability in your head, okay, resourcefulness, to think of this as a hustle and make money that way, why isn't that same ability to unite and unify for the right way to do things that will actually be more productive and yielding back to you be in your head as well?
Because that spits in the face of white supremacy and white privilege.
No. Carl, I'm not giving that excuse. I cannot do that. I understand the fear of getting up to think that you can. But damn it, try something once. If you can do that and risk getting caught and going to jail, why the hell aren't you taking the money you're making from this? Half of them are probably thinking about going out there to just make it back to go do it again. What for? No, enough. Enough with that. We know that it exists, but enough. Fight that.
I got you. I'm tired with you. Believe me, I'm tired with you. And when we had this conversation.
And the more you said no, the more they kept trying to say, look, 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 you know it's $2.50. I'm doing it for $2. $2. Come on, come on. I'll swipe you in, no problem.
Well,
in other words, let them use the card.
Well, maybe those are the guys who decided that maybe they wanted to go to jail because that's the only way they're going to get a damn hot meal and some education and some workout time and some TV time and things that they need or want.
You know what?
Because they're not getting it out here. That's like a defeatist attitude. That's when you've given up, Katie. When you put yourself in a position like what you were just describing as those gentlemen, to me personally, that means you've given up. You understand?
And
in the jail system, no, but Katie, we out here working, busting our behinds 5 days, 8 hours, just got the buildings on our shoulders. And we cannot get nothing for it. And people are starting to realize that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not making excuses for these brothers, but I'm just saying to you, as a woman, as a black woman who have a 9-to-5 and can't get no education, can't get no nothing, it's like when you go into the jail system and when you beat up, battered up, drugged up, ain't worth a damn dime, the system will help you. And a lot of people are picking up on that. I've picked up on it. I'm just not willing to do it.
Let me ask you something, okay? Because this is going back to the reasons why we are arguing or upset about the fact that our children are being snatched up into interracial relationships with half-informed other cultural parents. Here's what I'm saying. I look at you and your sister. When you come to any event, you are decked out. Now, granted, let's pretend you don't do your own fashion, because I know you do. But let's pretend you didn't. Let's pretend you're just working, you're hustling, you're doing what you got to do, and you're doing it legitimately, and you're dressed up. I cannot understand how you as a woman is out there dressed up by rightfully, legally obtained, bust my ass means, okay? And you're not out there trying to produce or promote a product illegally. However, I'm seeing these very brothers who, by way of what you're saying, possibly would have had the right to say that to me. And I've not seen them for 5 straight damn days, every single day of the week, wearing different, and hear what I'm telling you again, different outfits that are NBA official sneakers. Every single day, don't freaking tell me you can't get a damn job. If you're too busy knowing that you have it hard, listen, if you are busy telling me that you have it hard because you're a black man in America and white supremacy isn't doing this, how the hell are you affording $300 sneakers on a different day, every day, for 5 days?
That's a different story, Katie.
And I'm going to tell you why I know, because just one second, Professor. I'm going to tell you exactly how I know what them sneakers cost, because I just posted on Facebook that I was happy as a pig in crap, okay, to be able to afford on my discount a Knicks hat, an official Knicks cap, because I love my Knicks. Okay, and I'm happy, and I just posted as a joke that I'm going to work for the next 3 months to afford the 2 color sneakers that I want from NBA, and I don't even like wearing sneakers, but this is going to be my treat to myself. Mellow's Royal Blue and what I call Tyson Chandler's Orange sneakers, okay, and they're $300 a piece if you want to get them officially.
Wow.
$1,200 a week, but you got to sell a $2 MetroCard swipe and get 50 cents off. No.
I feel you. I stand corrected, but I wasn't talking about guys who wear, you know, in my mind, I wasn't seeing a man with $300 sneakers on. You know what I'm saying?
I don't care if you got it as a knockoff. I don't care if you got it as a knockoff. You're not going to sit there and tell me you're trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents when you're wearing $300 sneakers for 5 damn days, different ones. I don't care if you got them as a knockoff in somebody's trunk. They're still $150.
Well, you know what, Katie, this is Darlene. I just want to say, like, I've noticed that, you know, not just not just systematically have our black men, you know, lost a lot of their pride, but, you know, emotionally, you know, they have lost a lot of their pride. You know, our black men, and, you know, I love my people. I would not trade them in for the world. But we just need to get better in some areas. You know what I'm saying? And even us as the black women, and we've spoken about this numerous times, we, you know, society has placed us to where before where the man could be the breadwinner, the woman is the breadwinner. You know, we get the better jobs, we get the better pay. Our poor black men, they get scraps. You know what I'm saying? And that's not even to justify anything, by no means possible. But what I am saying, with the talent and the skills, because I can identify with what you're saying, if you have enough sense to create a hustle, then you know that might not be positive for you in your life. You know that can cause you some harm or cause you some danger or cause you to be jailed. Then you should take that same mentality and use it to create something that is legit.
I just wanted a chance to respond before
really
time is up. Okay, well, I tell you, that's okay.
Okay, well, I do want you to remember that thought, because there's a part two to this. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to wind down the show, but I will say this. I brought all of that up, ladies, to say this. We are not happy with the fact that our children are being plucked and brought into cultures not withstanding of them, okay? But this is not the way that we need to go and be our own lack of options. That is the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is so much deeper than that.
No, yeah.
The problem is really
it's a combination of problems, but that's one of them.
it's so much deeper. I posted a video in your group the other day just to show you the power of conformity. And it was just something where people conform to their condition, and it's a psychological thing. And it's, and not only psychological, it's socially engineered. People don't spend billions of dollars on stuff that don't work. They don't have think tanks working around the clock on things that don't work. Katie, you truly underestimate the power of these type of engines that are put in place. And the black man is the number one target of all of these engines. So
I can believe that.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.